You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, May 13th. Friday the 13th, 2022. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday, ladies and gentlemen. Casual Friday before our big live show in Boston. Alex Perrine will be joining us to look back on the week that were or was. Meanwhile, U.S. flags at half-mast as the country passes the 1 million COVID deaths mark. And meanwhile, vaccines may be rationed as U.S. runs out of COVID funding. Rand Paul holds up the $40 billion that we apparently have to provide Ukraine to buy more weapons. This as Finland's leaders seek to join NATO. Sweden expected to follow. Sam Alito apparently mum on court relations as Louisiana retreats on murder penalties for women who get abortions. And I should say they retreat as for now. Missouri about to pass a law which bars pharmacists from saying ivermectin doesn't work for COVID and to other such fun things.
Cancel culture.
Yeah. New report, Trump administration and meat companies, meat processing companies, knew they were endangering their workers during COVID. California's minimum wage will be rising to $15.50, triggered by inflation. Meanwhile, in that same state, a Trump-appointed judge says California cannot prohibit semi-automatic gun ownership from teens. January 6th committee subpoenas Minority Leader McCarthy and other Republican lawmakers. The Biden administration rolls out a plan to increase baby formula production. And lastly, Elon Musk, now in project back out of the Twitter deal, seems to have launched. Hold your horses, everybody. Elon Musk may have found out that Twitter is not quite what he's pretended it is. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Friday, Casual Friday. As you can see, I'm wearing a soft collared shirt. I just got an IM that's saying, if it's such a casual Friday, why don't you loosen up one more button, eh, Sam? And that one would be just a bridge too far. I've got two buttons. I got two buttons undone, and that's about as far as I go because this is a family show. So I wouldn't want to do that. Emma Figlin there also with her two buttons.
She had no, a three. But this is kind of just the style of the shirt. Wait,
women's buttons are there's more buttons. You have more buttons.
I have more buttons, yes. And I do not have a collar. So the third button acts as a collar. And now we're kind of at status quo. That's how it works.
There it is, folks. Not only do we give you on a daily basis great interviews and commentary and analysis of some of the news stories, but also fashion tips.
Yeah. Whew. Yeah, that's
can't do all of them great, I should just say.
That's something I've always struggled with, fashion stuff. That's not for me. That's not for me.
That's one of the reasons why you're here, because I didn't need to be, you know, I don't want to. If you look around the room,
You did not want to be intimidated.
Right. You look around the room. There's nobody here. I mean, look
at
Matt.
Adidas sweatpants on and Target Goodfellow brand t-shirt. So,
yeah. So,
whoa.
Matt's getting ready for a night out on the town.
No one's impressed by my form-fitting green sweatpants that I'm wearing?
Well, if they're form-fitting, you're already a step up.
Pistons over here.
We are headed to Boston tomorrow. Well, I think we're all heading tomorrow for the big live show in Boston at 2 p.m. If you're a Celtics fan, we will be wrapping up probably just after tip-off, so you can still watch the game. No problem.
Are you trying to jinx the Celtics?
Well, I'm just saying, you know, there's a good shot. I think this is going seven. We'll see. But tickets are still available. You're not going to want to miss this show. We're pretty excited. We got special guests. We got Natalie Scherr. We've got Ted Leo doing some tunes. He's assembled a great
super group,
Boston super group. This is like the super. This is like the super sessions. This is like when Al Kooper and Bloomfield got together.
I was gonna say that's kind of like what was the movie, the song, The Highwayman? Who, like, when the Johnny Cash,
Waylon Jennings, Chris Christopherson,
right? Sure. But they had their group anyway, whatever.
We have folks from Extinction Rebellion coming to the show. Of course,
they called them. Yeah, go on.
You'll see a ton of Majority Report listeners and folks. So definitely, if you are interested in coming, check it out at majoritylive.com. Majoritylive.com, and you can get your tickets that way. A lot of things to get to. This is, you know, par for the course. I mean, it's interesting. We had this story coming out of Louisiana, where a lawmaker had basically introduced to the assembly murder penalties for women who got abortions and other sundry things that are really, you know, let's be honest, it's consistent. I mean, if the argument is, right, that this is, and there's other going to be issues that it seems to me going to be raised. Like, if you can commit murder against a person, right? Like, we don't, there's no murder charges for killing life. There are no murder charges for killing, plants and frankly, I don't even know if we have murder charges for killing animals. I mean, you can get, cruelty to animals, I think, that are born. The issue is that this is a person that you're killing, right? It's an unborn baby, whatever that means. It would be consistent at that point to arrest everybody who is involved in that killing. So, arrest women who have abortions, arrest doctors, arrest all the people who aid and abet. I mean, if and arrest them. Why wouldn't you? And of course, the reason why you wouldn't do that is because these people know it is bat crap crazy to do this. They don't want people thinking about the implications and really the definitions that they're espousing. That is why you're hearing, when we have the vote the other day in the Senate to protect women, you heard Republicans talking about this bill isn't the status quo. They're pretending as if it, like, you know, post-born abortions, which also do not exist. That is murder, because that's a person. They have been born. And the amazing thing about all of this is we are watching the Republicans and the conservatives in this country have to pretend that taking away the right for people to have an abortion is not taking away the right for people to have an abortion, that it really is meaningless. This thing that they have been fighting for 50 years, this thing that was the litmus test for every one of Donald Trump's Supreme Court justices, this thing which really may have delivered the presidency to Donald Trump, now they're claiming completely irrelevant. I give you Donald Trump advisor and also Fox News host Sean Hannity.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, she was supposed to be a brilliant economic mind. As it turns out, Janet has lost all touch with reality. She now wants you to believe that a future Supreme Court ruling on Roe v. Wade is the cause of Joe Biden's economic and energy policies and all the problems we had. I thought this was all caused by Putin and Donald Trump. I guess I was wrong.
If the draft of the court's majority holding in Roe versus Wade is the actual decision, what impact will the loss of abortion access mean economically for women?
Well, I believe that eliminating the right of women to make decisions about when and whether to have children would have very damaging effects on the economy and would set women back decades.
There won't be a loss
of abortion access. And I want you to go back on this. But let's be clear here. The reason why that question is being asked is because it really is one step into understanding what this is about. Of course, for a percentage of women, maybe half, the primary problem will be it inhibits their ability to participate economically. Well, maybe, I don't know, the entire, all of the women are going to be inhibited in some fashion to engage in the economy. It's also going to cause an incredible amount of child poverty in this country. It is going to, it takes away, and by establishing that, on a data point, in terms of like the economy wide, it allows you to understand what is really going on here. It is a way to subjugate women and bring them back into the kitchen, more or less.
And taking away power in more ways than one, and in one way, it's economic power, which is economic freedom, the ability to decide when you want to have a child, when it works for you in your career, etc. And if patriarchy has that leverage over women, it makes things a lot easier to control them. So,
okay, now we go on to Hannity's. Not only does he not address the question of what it would do to women economically and to the economy writ large. Like I say, women are more or less half the economy, more or less, maybe a little bit less because of the way that we structure things. But here is Hannity now denying that Roe v. Wade means anything anyways.
There won't be a loss of abortion access. There might be restrictions in some states, but there's going to be plenty of opportunities for everyone that wants one.
What? What?
Abortions for all who want it. Except not.
It's just so stunning to me that they...
It's the only argument they have, though. And
yep.
You can talk about this with Perrine, but there's that study that's like, people don't believe when pollsters go say, hey, Republicans want to do this. Do you approve of it or not? And people don't believe that Republicans actually want to do that stuff. It's just a disbelief.
They don't want to, right? I mean, they don't want to actually grapple with the fact that this party is filled with fundamentalists and theocrats. And the only way to make it palatable for people is to downplay the effects.
And that's where you get the Trump derangement syndrome.
100%. Right? Liberals are hysterical and annoying. It's so annoying when they bring up these injustices and how rights are going to be taken away. Like, this kind of rhetoric numbs you to fundamental shifts in human rights, because if you blink, then they're already gone. And Hannity wants you to blink for a long period of time.
Yeah, it really begs the question, like, why do you care about Roe v. Wade? If it's not going to change anything, well, why do you care about Roe v. Wade?
Well, they're putting up a straw man and saying that Now their talking point is that Democrats want abortion all the way up to the point of birth, which is not true. It's just not true. And so that's the only argument that they have.
Well, they also have the states' rights one. This is just more democracy because you put the question back to the states.
And, like, let's be clear. A six-week abortion ban is effectively an abortion ban. I mean, like...
But they're all going to ban abortion anyways. We know. I know. The agenda. We don't need to speculate about this because we can see what's on the books in half the states anyways. So
100%.
It is completely just afraid that people are going to find out about this. All right. We got a couple of notes from our sponsors, and then we will take a break and get to Alex Perrine. Folks, I've mentioned this multiple times over the years. We have no memory in this country of anything. I mean, I personally have no memory of anything, but I've talked many times about Gore Vidal and his book, United States of Amnesia. And it is true. I have come to realize over the years that things get memory hold. That's how we end up praising George W. Bush and looking so lovable and recycling and reforming folks from that era. And that's why I want to encourage you to check out this podcast. A very helpful to get recent history. Check out Fiasco. It is a new Audible original podcast. It's documentary style podcast. It's hosted by Leon Nefok. He's the co-creator and original host of Slow Burn. And if you like the classic seasons that Leon and his team made about Watergate and the Clinton impeachment, I think you're going to love Fiasco. Each season of Fiasco goes deep on a huge, important story from American history. It can be relatively, I don't know, it feels like recent history to me. When I was an adult during this period, or close, college student, and brings it back to life through original interviews with key players and witnesses. The newest season of Fiasco is all about the AIDS crisis. It's an attempt to re-examine and reckon with the last time a deadly virus transformed American society. All the uncertainty, fear, prejudice that just came with it. There's new stuff out about Ed Koch lately, look back on the way that he dealt with AIDS and Reagan. Really interesting stuff. Very important for you to get this recent history to be able to contextualize what's going on today. You can listen to the new season of Fiasco exclusively on Audible. Just go to audible.com/fiascopod or text fiascopod to 500-500. So that's audible.com/fiascopod or text fiascopod to 500-500. Also, today's program sponsored by my favorite sponsor. And I think these guys are coming down to the show in Boston,
nice.
Which I am super excited to finally meet these guys. SunsetLakeSabade.com. In fact, I may even just on the Boston show say these three letters right here, Sabade, in the way that you're actually supposed to say them, because I can. Use the coupon code left is best, or as I say, left has passed, for 20% off on all of their products. They have new gummies, and I haven't tried them yet. But vegan melatonin CBD gummies, obviously, for sleeping. But they are vegan and they have melatonin and they are CBD gum. Oh, did I say the other word? CBD gummies.
No.
They have the gummies. They have the tinctures, and I am big on the tinctures. They have a salve with arnica, which they don't suggest its use for this. They say it's for muscle relaxing, but it is great for my eczema. Do not put it on your face. Arnica, no good on your face, around your eyes and your lips. Be careful, even though Dorsey uses it for his beard wax. They should come up with a CBD beard wax, I think, personally. But anyways, they also have coffee with CBD. They have fudge. They have smokables. After a nice meal, just to recall my days when I used to smoke cigarettes, I'll maybe have a smokable and relax. It's nice on the weekend. They also have kief and flour that you can mix with your other smokable products, now legal in New York State. So check it out. SunsetLakeCBD.com. They have great agricultural practices. They use they're pesticide-free. They use integrated pest management, organic fertilizer, integrated. They use regenerative farming techniques, and they also are a movement partner supporting the Worcester Nurses, supporting Project Innocence and soup kitchens, and just great folks there. SunsetLakeCBD.com. Left is best for 20% off. Check it out. All right, quick break. Alex Perrine will be joining us. We are back, Sam Seder, on the Majority Report on the ping, as we call it. Alex Perrine, host of the Politics of Everything podcast, and also are you contributing editor to New Republic? What is your
Contributing? Yeah, my title is contributing editor to the New Republic, and
contributing editor, and of course the proprietor of the AP, the good one.
Mm-hmm. Good AP, yeah.
The AP Substack. Alex Perrine, welcome back to the show, Alex. And you're in a new location. You got a whole new backdrop for it.
Globetrotter.
Yes, I'm in an entirely new location, yes. This is a temporary rental with a really crappy internet, and I'm loving every minute of it. But say hello, Emma. Hello.
Hello, Alex. Good to see you.
Excellent. Well, all right, let's start with this. You know, I just played a clip of Sean Hannity, who was mocking Janet Yellen for talking about the economic impact of Roe v. Wade. You know, obviously, it's going to limit women's ability to pursue careers in some instances. It is going to put a lot of kids into poverty. It is going to, you know, and we will see that on a macro level. But then the other thing that Hannity says is that, and like, Roe v. Wade's not gonna ban abortion. It's like pretending like it's gonna have no impact. What's going on? Because he's not the only person to do this.
Yeah, what's going on is, I just, in a collaboration with my friend Libby Watson, who writes the newsletter Sick Note, we just interviewed someone who recently went to go work for an abortion provider. That's not up yet, but it'll be up in my newsletter later today. What's going on is that because the consequences of this will be, I think, fairly dire for a lot of people, unequally felt. It's sort of dependent on people like Hannity to just straight up deny reality with the hope that the majority of his audience will not experience the bad things to come. And you know, cable news' audience is pretty old.
Right.
Fox News' audience is pretty old. And I would imagine demographically, you know, they also are more likely to be fairly well off. So even if they do reside in these conservative places where the Roe v. Wade ending will have immediate consequences, even if they reside in those places, they're not the demographic that will bear the burden of what is to come immediately.
And so
you can just lie to them. I mean, you can just lie to them.
Yeah, there's also this conservative impulse, I think, that is... It's easy for hosts like Hannity to feed into it, and it's to decry the radical left as hysterical and as over-emotional. Think of Trump derangement syndrome. Everything has a problem, right? Not, you know, there's this impulse, I think, from a conservative audience's standpoint to feel okay, to feel like their society is organized in the exact right way, and there's no problem here, and so that it's like a cozy bedtime story, and I think like that's primarily what a lot of conservative hosts are feeding into right now.
I hadn't thought that they, you know, it hadn't occurred to me that they are that sort of aware that like their audience is just not going to feel the impact of it. I mean, I guess maybe they would have, you know, possibly like their kids might be stuck here. But also, you know, and maybe they're just sort of like, sort of stepping up on things, because I think it seems to me inevitable if the Republicans control all three branches of our government that they're going to ban abortion across the board. I mean, they're gonna push a federal ban. It seems to me quite obvious. I know that McConnell said we wouldn't get rid of the filibuster, but I don't believe that for a minute. I think he'll be pressured into it because their losses would be devastating if they didn't. It seems to me, and the flip side of that is, we got, I think it was, I can't remember who it was that was on the Senate floor talking about why the Republicans voted against, McConnell, I think, said the same thing, why they voted against the Protect Abortion bill that came up onto the Senate floor. But they claim that the bill itself went way beyond where we are today.
Mm.
and, you know, introducing some other type of, like, I don't know, double abortion or hyper abortion. Like, what? Like, they've had to create some other villain besides abortion, because I just don't think that it's even close to sinking into the American public what is about to happen.
Yeah, I think I'm sorry if my connection's really bad now. I might have to call in, Sam. But
let's do the call in since it's breaking up. We just sent you the number. So why don't you just call in? We've got a picture.
Talk in 1 second.
Okay. There it is. There's a picture.
There's
of
Alex.
Yeah, and he's going to call in right now. And when he does, I'm going to take that call, right, guys?
Yes.
Okay. I got a little bit of a...
Should we take a break?
Let's take a... Let's take a quick break, and then when Alex gets back, we'll pop back on. All right, so we're back. Alex Breen now has just been reduced to a photograph and a voice. Sorry about that. It's the vagaries of internet connections. All right, but Alex, so I was just saying that the sort of the flip side of Republicans pretending that getting rid of Roe v. Wade is not going to impact anything that's going on, they are now trying to create this sort of like boogeyman of the attempt to legislate a version of Roe v. Wade, essentially, would, I don't know, create some new wild hyper version of abortion that that they say is not status quo.
Yeah, and I mean it's kind of a funny. It's not funny, but the move they did was. They have been restricting it in these ways for so long that they can say establishing through legislation an unrestricted right to abortion that's not the status quo, because we've done all these things in all these areas and all these states and all these regions where access is restricted in all these ways. But they can't quite come up with, I don't think, a coherent, like what the bad case scenario is of just sort of enshrining the right in law. So it's really just saying like, as you say, it would just be extra. It would be abortion plus. It would just be extra abortion if we did this, because they don't have a coherent justification.
They don't seem to be like almost like mentally prepared for this moment. And they don't seem to have a coherent plan on how to address it.
Well, the funny thing is that's true on both sides, isn't it?
Right.
Yes. Like and I think like a lot of left of center observers and legal experts could have told you this was coming. And yet, you know, the White House didn't seem to have anything ready, and you know, Democrats in Congress kind of scrambled on this, but Republicans are, it's an overused cliche, but a lot of them are, you know, the dogs who caught the car here. Right. And I think, a lot of them are basically in the same position as John Roberts right now, right? Like that's what's happening here is that, John Roberts is trying to pump the brakes, but then the people, you know, the actual people in charge are like, oh, we have enough power to do this now, so we're just going to do it.
And it feels like this is just, you know, once they once they walk through, once they cross this Rubicon, I guess, all bets are off. I mean, right? Like there's no inhibition. There's no inhibition once they get rid of a 50-year right, which I think is really, honestly, is unprecedented. I mean, we've had like sort of, you know, we've had some rollbacks when you look at like things like Reconstruction and whatnot, but there were loopholes built into that. And this is just a wholesale reversal of an individual right that women have had in this country for 50 years, and it's going to be rolled back. What, you know, how do there's no, once they've done that, there doesn't seem to be any limiting principle on anything that they want to roll back. Marriage equality.
Yeah. And
I don't know, the right to be gay. I mean, anything.
And I think Alito, assuming his draft opinion resembles the final thing, Alito was hinting at all of that. And I wrote last week about how one of the things hobbling the Democratic Party is that it's led by institutionalists who essentially believe in the legitimacy of these institutions, like the Supreme Court and like the U.S. Senate. And people with that mindset, I think, in this era, just can't actually accept reality. They can't accept the reality that these rights are not just like under threat, but like they could disappear in a week. There's just nothing stopping that from happening. And so I think because I think a lot of these older political leaders, have this fundamental belief that everything will just work out fine over the long term. They actually are not, they're not prepared whatsoever for, the reality you describe, in which a, hardcore right-wing majority on the court can roll back not just Roe v. Wade, but anything they want. And they want to roll back a lot.
I mean, even enough to the fact that they don't they don't discipline their own members enough to not be anti-abortion. I mean, like, maybe this is an easy way to talk about Pelosi and Henry Cuellar.
Let's play this clip. I mean, this is, I mean, I understand what's going on here, but it just seems to me to be absolutely wrong. And we should just say Nancy Pelosi is not the only member of the Democratic leadership. Clyburn, they're all on board with not just, you know, endorsing the reelection of Cuellar, but they're providing money and funds. And remember, this is not just that he's not anti-abortion. You guys being investigated by the FBI. So yeah, there's a lot of outs here for them. But here is Nancy Pelosi at a press conference.
Why you're supporting Henry Cuellar in his Texas runoff. You've long maintained that House members should have the highest ethical standards. But he had his house, as you know, raided by the FBI just several weeks ago.
Well, let me just thank you for the question. I'm supporting Henry Cuellar. He's a valued member of our caucus. The FBI has said he is not under investigation. And so it's up to his constituents to make the decision to send him to Congress. I am, I thought you were going to take it to choice or something. He is not pro-choice, but we didn't need him. We passed the bill with what we had. And by the way, this is...
Okay. I mean, when she says he's not under target of federal investigation, that's what his attorney told CBS News a few weeks ago. So, not sure if that's the case, but that's according to his attorney that she's saying, claiming that.
But let's talk about his position on abortion, because I get what she's saying here. We don't need his vote for this. And we need him to maintain the majority because maybe she thinks that Jennifer Cisneros can't win in that district. Cisneros can't win in that district. But isn't there like just a fundamental and I don't know, I guess that's debatable. But isn't there just a fundamental misunderstanding of like how it is impossible to message what should be, you know, right now a huge opportunity for Democrats to save, you know, their November from being a total disaster?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there is, so, you know, we've seen over the last few years the difficulty Democrats have had just sort of painting the Republicans and conservatives as extremist in a way that sticks with voters. And I think I literally just saw some poll that was like, people think that, you know, Democrats have gotten more extreme than Republicans or something like that. But like, one of the issues is that they, you know, Pelosi, in order to maintain her majority, is like, all right, turns out being anti-abortion is okay in certain circumstances. And, you know, we'll also, you know, go on a panel and be like, what we need is a strong and reasonable Republican Party back. And it's just, it's incoherent because, Americans are, I mean, you saw the dive bomb the Supreme Court took in its own polling of its own legitimacy. But I don't know how you can capitalize on that. I mean, how can you capitalize on that if you are not, at the very least, saying Cuellar, you know, not going to bat for it, right? Like, I think that would be the line to actually straddle here. If you believed, as I'm sure Pelosi believes, that Cuellar is more electable than Cisneros. But you don't have to go to bat for it. That's where it seems to me that they're just completely getting in their own way.
Absolutely. I mean, what position would you have to not be eligible for support to for support from Democratic leadership? What position would you have to have? Honestly, like, I can't come up with one.
Well, not on the right. There are no right wing ones. There are left wing ones you can't have. But
yes, I mean, honestly, like, what is the point? This is pretty low hanging fruit. This is like, you know, we want to deliver a message that's pretty straightforward, and they're stepping all over any of their messaging. I mean, it's fascinating. It sort of reminds me. And look, I get the idea that we want to hold the House. But the fact is that the name of the game right now is the Senate. It doesn't matter what holding the House. Like, I can understand why they say we need Joe Manchin, because stuff is happening in the Senate. We are, you know, at least getting judges on there. And at least, you know, in the event that the Supreme Court, you know, somebody gets hit by a bus, I think, let me just quote you. And I always appreciate when people say stuff like this. The commitment to our existing institutions means they can't credibly claim to have an answer to this moment. Quote, give us another majority and hope Clarence Thomas dies is a best case scenario, but not exactly a sales pitch. But, you know, I mean, at the very least, there's an opportunity. That's why the Senate is the whole game. The House isn't doing anything now. And it's like, I understand that Nancy Pelosi still wants to be leader, but you're stepping all over the ability for the Democrats long term to do anything.
And look, this is what seeing your job as incumbency protection gets you, because it you absolutely do not actually end up working for the best interests of your party. You end up working for the best interests of your individual members, and that can be very different. That can be a very different thing. And I think one of the really frustrating things about the Democrats, and especially coming, it's so funny. This is always a criticism from the left. It's always a criticism from the left from people who are like, I hate the Democrats. Because one of the things that frustrates them is that Democrats don't actually seem to want to fight to win power for themselves, right? Like they want to maintain Nancy Pelosi's leadership. They want to maintain Cuellar's seat. They do not want to advance the interests of what is called the Democratic Party. And at least that's how it seems to a lot of people. And it's like, the, you know, the longer you pay attention to this stuff, the weirder and more frustrating that is.
The closest thing I can analogize it to is the Red Sox prior to 2004. Like, you know, they were so interested in we just need to make it to the playoffs. And so they would have a team that they knew could not win in the playoffs, but they just needed to get there, essentially.
The Minnesota Vikings, too.
And so they would they would never take the risk associated with or make the investment that's associated with actually winning in a big, big way. So Nancy Pelosi is sitting there looking at the numbers and going, okay, the way that we can hold the House is, you know, one seat is going to make a big difference, and it very well may. And the calculation is that Jessica Cisneros could not win, but I'm sorry, you're hurting every other person.
And frankly,
running.
The calculation and the initial premise is wrong, because even if they want to quibble with the FBI investigation, he was still raided by the FBI. You think in the general election, that's not going to be used against him? I mean, come on.
And it's the other part of that, too, is the common moderate Democrat candidate or congressperson thing of, like, running off to give an interview to Politico saying, our party, the party I belong to, the party that I am running on the ballot line of, is out of control on these left-wing defund the police stuff, just in terms of game theory, it's like each one of these congresspeople and candidates is allowed to hurt the party's brand as a whole in service of their own election by defining themselves as against the party.
Right.
And in the aggregate, what does that do? It just drives home this idea that the Democratic Party is extreme left wing, out of touch. It's completely insane, but it's like not only allowed, it seems to be like an official position that you are allowed to take. And it, as you say, like, if you look at it from the perspective of each individual race, yeah, it makes sense for each individual candidate to define themselves in contrast to their party. And then when all of them do it, well, suddenly, why would anyone want the Democrats to be in charge of anything?
And the pit, I mean, they're going to be successful at this pitch of, like, you know, rolling back Roe v. Wade is actually the way to maintain the status quo in terms of abortions. And what the Democrats want to do is an extreme furtherance. And that's going to seem somewhat reasonable to a public that is, like, you know, always half or, you know, one quarter or one eighth paying attention, because being against abortion definitionally can't be so extreme that it couldn't allow you to be in the get support from the top echelons of the Democratic Party. I mean, it's just, it's nuts. It's nuts.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think too, it Pelosi saying, like, we talk about how old the leadership is, and this is a reflection of, belief among people of that political generation that Roe v. Wade, because it was settled policy, meant that you could indulge the occasional Catholic, rhetorically anti-abortion candidate. And that was fine to win those voters in districts where that was necessary, because they could say, oh, I'm personally against abortion. And you would know, but don't worry, that's settled law, so it doesn't matter. That's not the world we're living in. And that has not, absolutely, that has not hit home with the leadership of the party, that this is real. It is happening. The restrictions will be real. It will be outlawed. People will be prosecuted. It's all actually happening.
She, in 2017, told the Washington Post that abortion is, quote, kind of fading as an issue. It really is. That's what she said in 2017.
Jesus.
Like, talk about
Jesus.
A misunderstanding.
I didn't remember that one.
Yeah, I mean, I've been pulling up this article, I think, once a day to talk about this on the show. Because, I mean, doesn't that say everything there? Why they were so ill-prepared for this moment? They took it for granted. And at the same time, this like archaic leadership perceives abortion as such a sticky issue. It's so, you know, we don't want to even say the word, right? They're still operating in this Reagan Democrat mindset that they're completely disarmed when the most predictable thing ever happens. This was the number one consequence, and the stakes were when we were talking about the Supreme Court fight and why Obama's nominee Merrick Garland was being held up. This was what we were fearful of, the consequences of this. And yet they're still, I mean, around that same time, that's 2017. She's making this, I mean, it was right after that. She's making this case. It's unbelievable.
They don't take the right seriously. I mean, they don't, like, they just do not believe, because the Republicans that they interact with are of the suit-wearing professional types, and the suit-wearing professional types are the real psychos, frankly. But they don't take them seriously. They don't think they mean what they say. They literally don't think they mean what they say, because if they meant what they said, then we'd be in really bad trouble. And we can't be in bad trouble, because then we would have to do something.
Yeah.
You know, this it is, I don't know. Maybe it makes more sense in this other circumstance, but we had a similar sort of dynamic. I was listening to Biden gave, I guess, prepared remarks to an international summit on COVID, fighting COVID. And he's saying, like, now is the time to, you know, do something, and we're at the precipice and things could get much worse and on, all things I agree with. But it's as if he wasn't aware that 2 days earlier he had told the Senate, decouple the Ukraine aid from passing COVID funding. And now we literally are on the verge of having to ration vaccines because we don't have the money to buy. And I think there's every reason to believe right now that in the fall we could have a and we may not, but there's reason certainly to believe that in the fall we could have a really disastrous situation on our hand, beyond the disaster of a million people dead. But I just don't understand how, like, what is the point of this? Why go in front of the international community and say we desperately need to have COVID funding when you have just basically jettisoned the way that, you know, the way that you could have ensured that COVID funding, which is not to say that I think that we should be providing necessarily all these weapons at this point in the fight in Ukraine. But putting that aside, if you're going to at least get the COVID funding too.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, there's been a lot of political gamesmanship around what happens when you decouple one thing you want from another thing you want in Congress lately. For some reason, the lessons that I thought were very obvious don't seem to have been learned. I truly don't know. And I think it's just the Senate is so dysfunctional. White House is just so, I don't even know if they're in denial about it, but it's like they just accept it as a natural feature of the landscape, right? Like they accept as just a natural feature of the landscape that Congress is broken and nothing can work. And so you have to do these workarounds. You got to, you know, decouple stuff so you can fast track one thing sometimes. And then they don't even connect that to the rhetoric you were then talking about, where you go give a big speech and you say it's urgent and necessary that we do this. And that's actually a really common mode in Washington, is to say it's urgent and necessary that we do this while not actually trying to think of how you would do it with the current institutions that we have. Like these people don't even connect those ideas in their head. I think that's, so, you know, like it's easier to imagine like, it's easier to imagine your speech, like, unlocking the compassion of the world than it is to imagine, like, being able to change the way the Senate passes legislation.
It's terrifying. And then, you know, and despite all this, and you know, I think the chances of the Democrats retaining the House just seem to be, you know, I don't want to say zero, but pretty close. particularly yeah. after, you know, and I guess it remains to be seen, but New York is going to be losing three or four seats that, you know, maybe we had anticipated would be going to Democrats because of these redistricting maps need to be redrawn. But, you know, again, we need to see how that turns out. I do think that there's a decent chance of retaining the Senate, though, oddly enough. You know, I mean, I think Pennsylvania's, you know, looking pretty good, maybe. I think there's a chance in Ohio. I think, you know, the Roe v. Wade thing should help in New Hampshire. And frankly, in Arizona and North Carolina seems to be maybe. I mean, but it is stunning to see I want to believe that they're waiting for the decision to come down in June, but deep down I realize it's just complete, total wishful thinking. And I can't tell if part of the problem is that, you know, I don't know if Joe Biden is actually shaking hands with people who are not there. My guess is that he's not. But I also don't think that he's like ever been a guy who has a vision, right? I mean, he didn't even run on a vision.
Yeah.
He ran on, I mean, I think he had good proposal, you know, some good policies, which he adopted from the Sanders wing of the party, which he is yet to actually carry out. But he doesn't have he's not directing the messaging, and he's not even modeling what the messaging should be. It feels like there is no party apparatus except for, you know, when it comes to Henry Cuellar.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And this is actually, I think you're completely right. And like, Joe Biden is a transactional politician. You know, he's never even really, you know, he's been called, you know, he's been associated with the New Democrats. He's been associated with that side of the party, but he's really just always just been a purely, go with the flow, transactional retail guy. He's a retail politics guy. I think that it's wild that there is no national messaging that is getting through to anyone about really anything. There's no narrative. I think that you could be running on blaming inflation on corporate greed. And like, and I'm just saying like things you could be doing that would just be effective, not even just like the like having to make complicated arguments to people, but like, you know, no one's talking about rent. No one's talking about, you know, they talk about gas prices, but not rent, which I always find insane considering how many millions of Americans are renters now. And it's, again, because they are all from an age when that wasn't true, before the financial crisis. And obviously, like Roe v. Wade, like they are not willing to say what will happen when that decision goes down. I think maybe they haven't grappled with it themselves. But I think there are a lot of really obvious cases they could be making that they're not. And a part of the reason for that is because, as you say, the most important campaign they're engaged in right now is a national campaign to make sure that progressive challengers don't win primaries, which is insane behavior.
It's crazy. And I mean, I, you know, again, so much of this comes back and people are like, well, it's not, why are you talking about Nancy Pelosi being old? It's not so much that her age is old. It is her politics are completely out of touch because she's from a generation. And I'm not saying, yeah, you know, it's not an age cohort. Obviously there are people in her generation, but the politics she learned are just it's literally like as if it was in a different language.
I want to be clear, generations are a made up thing. Generations are a made up thing. But like people grow up within particular contexts, within particular material contexts that inform their worldview. Like that's very basic. And that's why this stuff matters more than just making fun of someone for being old.
And it doesn't feel like at this juncture there's much that we can do other than hope that, you know, there's some important primaries in Pennsylvania. We lost one on the progressive end in Ohio. But it's really just on some level, adding more progressives, and just also, I think it's, you know, again, it's generational on some level because I think that even some of the so-called moderates, like the conservative leaning Democrats, get that, like, you need to at least, you know, sort of appear to be fighting for something. Opposed to these sort of like small transactional, stripping women of abortion rights is horrible, but it's not so horrible that if we can't get, somebody who will vote for me for leadership and retain the leadership in the House, then I mean, it's not that level horrible. Like what? Like it doesn't, it just doesn't make any sense. It just seems so incoherent and it almost inhibits. And it's, they're almost like not quite shameless enough to be able to do both things in an effective manner. I think it must inhibit them, too. I don't think Nancy Pelosi can get up there and say it is an incredibly extreme position in this country right now to say that women should not have the right to choose, because she knows she's literally supporting a lawmaker who believes that.
Right. No, exactly. Yes.
And just in the way that she says, I know we're going over this territory again, but I just want to make this clear. In the same way that she says, it doesn't matter, we don't need his vote. Well, we also don't need the House's vote because we don't have it in the Senate. Right. It's like you can't, that argument goes both ways. It's either you guys believe in this or you don't. You're going to try and elect more candidates who believe in this or you don't. And it doesn't matter what the House passes. And we saw that.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I mean, Pelosi's been at this for a long time. And her regular routine of pointing to things she got passed in the House that go nowhere in the Senate, I think it's grown a little old.
Well, that's the thing.
At some point you have to articulate, you have to articulate that you have some plan. You have to make it clear to people you have a plan for how you will accomplish the shit you claim to want to accomplish.
I mean, if there was also any evidence that passing these bills in the House had any political value writ large, it would make some sense, but they passed all those like messaging bills and it did nothing, not materially and not politically, neither. Well,
I mean, I think is another new reality that has not been absorbed by Democrats is that the days when campaign mailers that could tout your vote on an issue actually meant anything to anyone are, if that ever worked, are long gone. Because the opposition is not just going to make hay of some sort of trap vote you took. They are just going to make things up. And that's been true for years now, and it doesn't seem to have changed how members of Congress act, which I find quite odd.
It is stunning to watch this happen over and over again. Well, hope springs eternal. Maybe they'll shift after, the court actually announces. I don't know how you go back and, you know, claw back that money from Cuellar, but we will see. Alex Perrine, always, always a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Alex.
So we got to take a break and head into the fun half of the program. Dave from Jamaica. Sam, I must say, recently your criticism of the Democrats is on point, but it's not helping the base to increase voting percentages, and it showed in primaries, and it will show in midterms. Can't we wait till midterms to understand that Democrats need all of our support to get back some seats or even retain? How is it smart for us to criticize the establishment so often when we know they're not listening? Why not reduce harm, increase voting participation, and get Democrats back to power without the need for Manchin? Look, I agree. I mean, we started off this program by, talking about, or I guess, maybe it was a pre-record, but, we've got primaries in Pennsylvania on Tuesday. Hugely important for people to go out and vote. I mean, I don't know how much clearer I can be that we need to vote for Democrats.
Yeah.
But, if it is true that criticizing Nancy Pelosi and the leadership of the Democratic Party are doing so depresses turnout, despite the fact that we also say you got to go out and vote for them, then how could it be true that, like, we're not going to have any impact on Democrats? Because the reality is, in the show, there are probably far more people who are involved in progressive politics actively who listen to this show than voters who are like, I'm a little swayed by Sam's critique of Pelosi. I'm not going to vote for Jessica Cisneros. I mean, I just don't think that's happening.
Yeah, I think, Dave, understand your fears, but I think the audience's ability to critically think about this and do multiple things at once is, I think it's more than sufficient.
Yeah, and also we have to rehash our, dispute with, Jimmy Dore about this exact strategic question enough to where I think it probably gets through to people.
Yeah.
Oh, Dave from Jamaica said that someone was taking his name. That's not cool.
Ah.
I was going to say, that didn't seem like a Dave from Jamaica point.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, split the spliff. Please explain your hypocrisy on complaining about how the establishment Democrats act and then turn and say vote for Clinton. Oh, I can do that very easily. Let me explain that.
Oh, my God.
You have a limited brain capacity. So what appears to be hypocrisy, A, you don't know what hypocrisy means. Because critiquing the Democratic establishment and then voting for them in the general election is not hypocritical. That's not what that word means.
Not remotely.
So that's my explanation.
They think like they're going to get to the pearly gates and like God is going to look down like, you did this amount of voting, sir, for this evil party. That's not what voting is. You're childish about voting. And I don't know. There's so much of this like dumb sentiment that I think the GOP must actively be like subsidizing it somehow.
It, yeah.
Oh my God. They should be. Folks, when we go to the fun half there, I've gotten a bunch of different questions about this. There are multiple ways for you to, first of all, if you're watching live, the fun half will populate in the YouTube live stream automatically. In addition,
if you have autoplay on,
if it does not, then you can go into the description of the free show, and we have a link to the Fun Half show live, and you click on it, and you can get there. If you watch the show after on YouTube, and you are a member, you go to majority.fm. You find that day's show. Today is Friday, for instance, or you could go back to Monday. Well, you go back even before then. Find that day's member post, and there will be a link to the Fun Half show. And if you're watching on your Roku YouTube app on your TV, let's say, it's a little bit janky, and we've got to fix this, and we're working on it. But what you need to do is just go onto your computer first, go log into a member as majority.fm, click on that link that I just talked about,
or your phone, right?
Or you could do this on your phone.
And it comes up in your YouTube app, and then it's in your history.
Yes, and then when it comes up on your YouTube app, it's in your history, and then as long as you're logged in, and you will be able to find it on your TV.
Yeah.
So there it is. Those are the ways to get it. We've got other things in the works, and we're still working on that. But the bottom line is, if you want to be a member and watch the Fun app, join themajorityreport.com. It is your support that makes our show possible more and more. Tricky days, but we had some advertising issues. We're going through like sort of the secular YouTube waning because people are just not that into politics at the moment. But for people who, casual watchers, but you can support this show by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you allow this show to survive and thrive. And you get the free half free of commercials. And then you get the Fun Half.
Yeah, you don't have Trump to get people excited about politics anymore. Mm.
I know it. And of course, we've banned so many people from YouTube that we don't get the views that we used to.
That's true.
Censoring people, clicks on us. We're being shadow banned.
So yeah, censorship versus profits is a really tough dilemma for us.
Yeah. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Lekian media universe?
Oh, yeah. Check out our discussion with Nick Bolin on the unanimously voted to unionize Starbucks workers in Denver. And also we'll have a think tank for patrons this weekend, patreon.com/leftreckoning.
Oh, folks, somebody just asked me, too. How do I... view or listen to the Brooklyn show, and that is also log in. You can search it on the app if you want to listen to the audio of it, and we have that link in the Bradley in the member post for that, the video link.
I will double check, but I believe so, yes.
You mean the old live show?
Yeah, the March 26th.
The Brooklyn live show, yeah. Now, we're not going to be live streaming the Boston show because we can't, because the Wilbur has, Tim Pool quality internet connection. So we can't live stream from there. But we will record it, and I'm not sure exactly what we're going to do with that. We will see. We will see. Yes. All right. 646-257-3920 is the number. We're going to head into the Fun Half of the program, and we will see you there. Oh, there. Don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Get some of that MR blend. Check it out. You will not be disappointed with their coffee. All right. See you in the Fun Half. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. The Majority
Report. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt!
Who? Fun. What is up, everyone? Fun.
Nomi Keen.
You did it! Fun. Let's go, Brandon!
Fun.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today!
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this,
7A.
Yes.
Hi, me? Is this me?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go start life.
Libertarians.
They're so stupid though.
Common sense says of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-3501. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion. Sold. It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this. Poop.
Call it satire. Sam goes satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we've seen you. All right, folks. Folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow,
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick, so screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.